Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you may find yourself around the world. Welcome to DevelopPod. This is the third in a six-part series of interviews with ELT influencers. Earlier this year, we at TDSIG ran a competition for people to win an IOTAFL membership. We asked people to nominate someone within the ELT industry and explain how that person had influenced them in their teaching career. Today, we hear from one of these winners, Tamara Parsons, who nominated EdTech trainer Nick Peachy. After that, we hear from Nick Peachy himself, who responds to the questions that I pose on Tamara's behalf. So, over to Tamara.
I'm Tamara Parsons. I'm a freelance English language teacher and teacher trainer. I'm currently living and working in France and teaching at a school for embryo pilots. So the next time you hop on a plane and you hear, "Hello, this is your captain speaking," I may have had a hand in that. I also run a project for the collaborative development of English language teachers called ELT.training. The project revolves around the idea that as teachers, we all have something that we know. We all have some knowledge. We've all acquired insight into something and we should pass it on. About 10, 12 years ago, I did the CELTA. And then more recently, I've completed the DIP TESOL, which was a wonderful experience that I can recommend highly to anyone who may be interested. The person in ELT that I feel has possibly most influenced me is Nick Peachy. Now, I will be perfectly honest, I'd never heard of him. I knew nothing about him. I went to a teacher training day for the company, the homestay teaching company that I was working for in Bristol in, 2011, maybe 2012, and had a great day. David Crystal was speaking. There was a fantastic lunch. I met loads of other teachers, learnt lots of useful stuff. And the last session of the day, the thing I wanted to do was full. And the only place that had spaces was a talk with Nick Peachy that was a bring your own device type thing. Now, I didn't have a device with me. In fact, I didn't even own a device at this point. But I went along anyway, because that was all that was free. And I knew nothing about him. I don't know if he'd produced anything, any worthy works had been published, or he'd done much in the way of speaking. I have no idea. I apologise. But that hour that followed was possibly the most influential in my professional life. When I did the CELTA, there was not much to be said about EdTech. Nick Peachy, on the other hand, was full of EdTech, and my eyes were well and truly opened by the wealth of possibility, opportunity, and language learning affordances presented by simple apps, websites, and software. I knew very, very little about technology at this point, but I learnt in that hour that there was a site or a program or an app for just about everything. If you had shy learners, they could make videos without appearing on them. You could do instant feedback via email. You could use technology to flip classes. I'd never even heard of class flipping. Making interactive quizzes and, everything. Everything you could possibly think of, Nick Peachy was there telling me it could happen. So were I to meet him, I would be really interested to know what piqued his interest at that time, because I think he was a bit of a forerunner. I would also be really interested to know what he think is the next big thing to come, because I think I'd like to stay one step ahead of the ELT game too.
Welcome, Nick Peachy, to the virtual studio. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a great pleasure and a great honour to be asked.
Could you tell us a little bit, maybe before we get to Tamara's questions, about where you're based and a little bit about your career, past and present?
Sure. I'm based in Kent nowadays, and I've been working back in the UK for the last 10 years, I guess. Originally, I studied music and I taught the guitar. And when I finished my degree, I sort of got interested in going abroad. So I did a CELTA course back in 1992 and back in Cairo, and got really interested in it. I didn't expect it to be so interesting and so engaging. And I really loved teaching, and I loved being in the classroom with students instead of sitting on my own practicing with a guitar. It was great.
I see the guitar behind you there. Yeah.
Yeah, it still gets out every now and again. Yeah. And so from that, I kind of taught at various places around the world, for the British Council and for International House, and got involved in teacher training while I was at International House in Barcelona, and got really involved in SALTA training. And, you know, I'd done my diploma and was thinking about where to look next. And that was about the same time that my daughter was born. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of interested in using the computer to keep her in touch with her first language culture. And so I did a master's in educational technology with Manchester University, which I did sort of via distance, and got really involved in technology that way.
Yeah, I studied my MA at Manchester, coincidentally, as well. Great university.
Yeah. I never went there. I did it all by distance.
I didn't either. All distance. Yeah. And that really set me up for online learning as well. And online teaching. Right, so what kind of year was this where you really got into technology?
I mean, I think I started the master's in 1999, back in the last century, and eventually finished it in 2004. And because of that, I got into sort of developing digital products and projects for teachers, and worked with the British Council on the Teaching English website when that first launched. And in 2007, I decided to go freelance and started working as an educational technology consultant, trainer, writer, author. And that kind of took me through a few years until I wrote my first book, which was Digital Video, which won the Innovations Award for me in 2016. And that was kind of the springboard to launching Peachy Publications, which is, you know, what I do now, at least some of the time. I still have to do the freelance stuff to sort of pay the bills, but that's my kind of my side project and sort of what keeps my heart beating, I guess.
Yeah, you managed to pack a lot in, certainly. I was reflecting that our careers are very different, and yet in some ways I've followed a parallel trajectory. Started at the same time, CELTA, diploma, MA, teaching CELTA and diploma / Delta. But yours has really rocketed into orbit. And I think what you do extremely well. And you found a niche, as Tamara has said. She attended your workshop more or less, by my calculations, at least 5 or 6 years after technology really exploded in your life and it took off, you became super interested. So she asked the question, what piqued your interest at that time? Because she thinks you were a bit of a forerunner.
Well, I guess, I don't know if I'm a forerunner, but I guess the thing that got me interested initially, like I said, was my daughter. And, you know, she was born in Barcelona, and, you know, from being a baby, she would sit on my knee at the computer and we would do stuff on the computer together. And she was sort of really engaged with that. You know, she's 21 years old now, so she probably won't want to hear that. But and we played quite a lot of computer games and sort of, you know, things like that. And, you know, it really struck me that, you know, this has something, you know. I mean, the other thing, I guess, about when I chose the master's was that, you know, I actually didn't know anything about technology. I'd only just got my first computer and got it connected to the internet. And, you know, I was thinking about doing an MA, and I thought about language acquisition and grammar, and I was thinking, oh, God, you know, I don't think I could spend, you know, years doing that in my free time. And so, and I heard about someone else who was doing this master's in technology, and I thought, well, that sounds great. Sounds really interesting. And it did. It really kind of, at the time, it really brought something fresh to my teaching. There were lots of new things to learn and lots of things to try out. And in a way, that's still the same. There's, you know, lots of new things happening all the time. And if you're into technology, or if you're curious about it, it's great to constantly have something new to try out.
You know? Sure, sure. And
that's something I really like.
Yeah, it's about being curious, isn't it? That's where we start learning, I guess. That's as simple as it sounds. And what kind of technology was around perhaps 2006, 2007? We were just chatting before this about those first electronic typewriters, weren't we, where you typed a line and then it printed out with massive noise. And then it would take about 3 minutes to print each line, as I seem to remember.
Yeah, I had one with a little box on where you had to put in all the the HTML kind of thing, which is quite useful because, you know, I still remember some of that HTML. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but about I guess around 2005, 2006 was quite an interesting time for technology because it was, everybody used to go on about Web 2.0. Mm-hmm. And that was a big change because it was a change from, you know, when the internet became something that other people created and you could use to becoming something that we could actually create and upload our own content. You know, and user generated content became a big thing. That was sort of the time where, you know, things like YouTube were really taking off, and those were still something new. So that was quite an exciting time, you know. And you started to find it much easier to put together, you know, really nice looking websites without having to write lots of code, which previously, you know, people had to do, or creating interaction. I think, you know, especially with the iPad now, I think people don't realize how easy it is now compared to, you know, 10 or 20 years ago when you had to learn some code if you wanted to create anything, you know, even reasonably interesting.
I remember learning that first code in my mathematics classes in the 1970s, actually, or early 80s. And it went completely over my head. I think I'm too much of a lateral thinker as opposed to a step-by-step logical thinker. However, I'm glad other people did it for us. And as you said, there was a massive explosion around that time with Web 2.0, right? So what kind of rudimentary apps and websites or electronic materials were you getting into and promoting at that time?
I think, you know, a lot of things like forums, using an online classroom. I mean, there was quite a good online classroom around in 1999. I used to use something called nicenet.org, which was great. And, you know, you could post student assignments on it and things like that. Going back to 2005, 2006, I'm not sure what was around then. I know that Ning was very big in terms of, you know, communities, and there were a lot of apps where you could sort of record your voice and create, you know, voice threads so students could listen and interact with it. A few sort of video-based apps where you could send video-recorded messages to someone and things like that. Those kinds of things were very useful because, you know, students could record their message and watch themselves and reflect on their own speaking and you know, that kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah, and today things like screencasting, video conferencing, teaching online, these are all extremely current. Back in those days, it was a minority. I guess you would agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, connectivity was still a big issue. I mean, things like this Zoom video conference in Skype have been around for quite a long time, but, you know, actually having the connectivity to make them work properly has taken quite a long time, I think. I mean, I was working about 4 or 5 years ago with a school called English Up, teaching 100% online in Brazil. And, you know, we had a group of 70 teachers all over the world, and they would sort of connect up with students in Brazil and teach them English one-to-one. And at the time, you know, it would work when the connectivity worked, but it was still sort of a bit fragile. And, you know, we had to sort of, you know, have backup plans for what happened when the connectivity wouldn't work.
And, yeah. And now, of course, everyone is teaching online, or at least most people. We've been wrenched, I use that word cautiously, but wrenched into the modern age, in inverted commas. And many teachers are now having to consider, at the very least, and probably actually engaging in online teaching. First of all, did you expect it, this explosion in online learning?
You know, it's something that's been slowly coming anyway. When I worked with the school English Up, we tried to help other schools set up. And what we found was that, you know, there was quite a lot of resistance from teachers and from management, and people were hanging on to their business model that worked, you know, and they were worried about, okay, if people start teaching online, are they still going to want to come to class? So, you know, am I undermining my existing business? And there was quite a lack of materials for teaching online. You know, people could see that the technology worked, but, you know, there weren't the course books and things like that. And, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I do with Pitchy Publications, is that, you know, I produce materials that will work in this kind of environment, because, you know, this is something that I saw moving forward and something for the future. But I don't think, you know, there was no way to predict it would move forward so suddenly, or as a reaction to something so negative that's happened. And, but I think it was something that was going to happen gradually anyway.
Okay. And how do you see things changing? Maybe I shall ask Tamara's next question, and that's she's really interested to know what you think is the next big thing to come, because she'd like to stay one step ahead of the ELT game too. I think you've got some competition there, Nick, perhaps.
Yeah. I think there are, you know, there are a number of big things that have been happening and are happening. And, you know, I found that like this, for example, this video conferencing, things don't normally change that suddenly in education. Change comes pretty slow. You know, a lot of what we do is still very similar to what we did 20, 30, 40, or even 100, 200 years ago. You know, but there are things that are happening in technology. I mean, I think there are three kind of quite important strands that are running at the moment. There's sort of the impact of artificial intelligence and improvements in artificial intelligence, which I think sort of for online learning is going to mean that we're going to be interacting with, you know, intelligent bots, if you like, online. So when you chat with someone online, you might actually be chatting with an AI bot rather than with a person. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, they can take some of the legwork out of the kind of normal day-to-day questions that tutors get asked online, like, you know, when's my homework due, or even, you know, can you explain the form of the present perfect? You know, a lot of those questions can be handled very well by bots nowadays, mm-hmm. and using artificial intelligence.
As far as I understand, at least, bots are becoming really viable in education and elsewhere. Was it last year or the year before that the first bot, what's the test? Is it the Turing test?
Yeah, that's right, the Turing test. Mm-hmm. And it's having the ability to fool someone that you're actually a person.
Yeah, so it may be like a little bit of an artificial question, how long is a piece of string, but I guess people naturally interested in when will bots take over? And I'm sure it's, as you say, it's a gradual process and they may not take over anyway. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, if you could put a figure on it, let's imagine how long will it be before teachers and students are engaging in the use of AI, and particularly bots, as much as they are currently engaging with online learning?
It's very hard to predict those things, but I would have thought over the next kind of 5 to 10 years at the most. Okay. You know, there are schools using them now, and often these things are driven, you know, they're not driven by pedagogy, or they're often driven by financial constraints or financial demands as well. You know, if, you know, after this crisis passes, there are still a lot of people teaching online, and they're, you know, the schools are developing lots more online courses and asynchronous courses, then of course, you know, there'll be the demand for teachers, which, you know, we're a commodity and we're viewed as an expensive commodity, even though we're not paid very well. And, you know, and so that will be where sort of AI bots start to step in to handle some of the legwork. You know, often it's, things can be driven by something that's, you know, quite arbitrary in some ways.
Yes. Yeah. So a little unpredictable, but perhaps mm-hmm. 5 to 10 years, I think you said, yeah. Right? Okay. Perhaps I interrupted your flow of thought. That was the first strand. Yeah.
I think the other element of AI is that AI has the ability to sort of look at data and analyze data for us and give us, you know, give us sort of implications and outcomes from that. And I think that might be the other application of AI that makes quite a big push into what we're doing. With more students studying online, it'll be able to analyze all that data that's being collected and give us kind of some insights from that, which would be useful. I guess one of the other things is virtual reality and 3D worlds. That's something that's been sort of happening for a while. You know, I think it was, over 10 years ago, I was doing work in Second Life and sort of developing courses in Second Life, the 3D virtual world. And again, it was, you know, the connectivity and the technology wasn't quite there. But that's something that can still happen, you know. Once we get our virtual reality headsets linked up to a communal 3D world where we can interact, you won't have to go to class and you won't have to have this kind of video screen between us. We can sort of put on our virtual headsets and we can be anywhere in the world interacting together.
And do you think that's a certain that will happen, and if so, what's the time frame in similar terms to the previous question?
I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. The time frame for that would be longer, I think, but it depends a lot, again, on connectivity. And, you know, we're probably talking about sort of a 10 years or something like that. I mean, it's amazing because when I was working in Second Life, you know, more than 10 years ago, people were saying, oh, well, you know, 2 years from now, everyone will have their virtual avatar, you know, and of course, here we are 10 years later and they don't, they haven't. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of things change very slowly, you know, even though, it, you know, it is possible right now.
Sure, yeah. And also, I'm sure you'd agree that it's very much context-based as well. Not everyone can afford, have access to such technology or have the connectivity as you focused on. Yeah.
And I mean, that's one thing that why we're able to do this now with Zoom is the technology has got that much cheaper, hasn't it? And and even, you know, if you've got mobile 4G, you can do this on your phone, which was, you know, unthinkable a few years ago.
But nonetheless, there's major swathes of the world population who can't afford a constant connection, never mind have access to 3G or 4G. Okay, you were mentioning those three strands. And so you mentioned AI and also virtual reality.
I guess the other one would be augmented reality, which is sort of more connected with location-specific internet. So, you know, if you're wandering around with your phone at the moment, you can use augmented reality apps, which will kind of tell you about where you are. But, you know, as that develops, you can start interacting with your environment through those kinds of apps or through, you know, virtual reality glasses. You know, Google Glass was, you know, being pushed as being the next big thing. And, that, you know, there were lots of great ideas around what that could do. And of course, that went away. But those kind of things will come back again. You know, once they're possible, you know, people will find things to do with them and find ways to develop them and make them useful, I think. Okay. And, you know, I think it's quite a natural way to learn as well. If you can imagine, you know, I mean, when I was a kid at school, we used to go on nature walks and pick up leaves and trees, and our teacher would tell us about them. But if you imagine now you could go out with your phone and it knew where you are and it could see what you were looking at, it could sort of also tell you about things or you know, translate things for you, or, you know, you could go into a supermarket in any country in the world and, you know, your phone would be able to tell you, you know, what's on the shelf and how to ask for it or something like that. You know, those things are going to become possible eventually.
That's an interesting future. It seems to me there's a crossover between virtual reality and augmented reality, and perhaps those two things may begin to kind of blur.
Yeah. For me, the big difference between the two is augmented reality tells you more about your own physical reality, whereas virtual reality takes you into a new reality. You
know, you're
into a new manufactured cosmos that could be anything.
Yeah, but in terms of education, the way we engage, sometimes we can be in virtual reality, and for a moment at least, if we're very engaged, that can seem like reality, right?
Yeah.
Those kids or adults completely immersed for hours on end, that becomes their new real, I suppose, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Pluses and minuses,
That's right,
Okay. And anything else you'd like to mention in terms of the growth in technology, what's currently happening in the future?
I think, you know, one of the other things that maybe is happening or that a lot of people worry about is these kind of earbuds that kind of translate for you. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of teachers sort of feel that, you know, language teaching might disappear if you can just put some buds in your ear and understand any language. And that's quite an interesting thing. And those kinds of translation devices are getting much better.
I think most people are familiar with Google Translate, of course, but what kind of technology would you be talking about there?
There are some sort of earbuds that are just like the earbuds that we use here that you put in your ear. It connects up to your phone. Your phone can hear what someone's saying and it instantaneously translates when you say something. If the person you're talking with is wearing them,
Incredible. It
instantaneously translates for them. But it is questionable how, you know, accurate they are and efficient they are, because, you know, as we know, you know, communication isn't just about the language and about the words you're saying. You know, so there is that aspect of it. And I always think that, you know, they're a little bit like when Guitar Hero came out, you know, everybody sort of, you know, could have the buzz of imagining that they could play the guitar by, you know, standing in front of their TV screen playing along with some buttons, you know, on their Wii controller. But, you know, I think there's still going to be people who really want to do it. You know, for me, that's, you know, that's nothing like playing a real guitar. I mean, it might give you the buzz of standing in front of an audience or or, you know, playing along with a band, but it's not the same thing.
Let's hope to some extent that the development of earbuds for translation fall well behind. At least they're not available for a little time. But we need to make language learning and language usage accessible to everybody. And if that technology was available, how incredible would that be? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you so much for your time, Nick. It's been a real pleasure to meet you. You're an inspiration to many people, including Tamara. And so thank you and good luck with your ongoing work.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All the best to you. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks very much.
Hi, everyone. This is Tyson Seaburn, your friendly coordinator of TDSIG. And I'm here to give you a little bit of news about what's going on. The main thing that's happening really soon, December 5th and 6th, is our Web Carnival, where we've partnered with Global Issues SIG. It is focused on race and queerness and ELT. So we have 3 keynotes, we have 14 concurrent talks, we have 2 forum, and 2 moderated chats during this 2-day event. And one of the main reasons why we chose to do this was because quite often race and queerness are on the fringe of a conference in certain talks. It's not really the main theme. And we wanted to center these ideas and give and amplify many different people's voices that maybe we wouldn't hear otherwise. One aspect of this that you may be interested in is that there is no pre-registration or registration fee. However, it's a donate-based approach. So we will be giving all donations split between 2 charities. 75% will go to a charity that's relevant and suggested by the participants, and the other 25% will go back to an iTEFL charity. In addition to Web Carnival, there is the Teacher Development Academic Journal, which is also on race and queerness, and it's sort of a follow-up for the Web Carnival Community of Practice Month that was in November and the 2-day live event. Here we are looking for articles that will be written about race and queerness, or race or queerness in ELT, and they will be published through our peer-reviewed journal next year sometime. And finally, we have our pre-conference event that hopefully will go ahead in Harrogate in June next year. It's on alternative forms of TD, so if you're interested and able to join us in Harrogate, provided everything's smoothed out by then, we'd love to see you, and you can register from our website. Thank you very much, and have an excellent weekend.